Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. This is part two of our chat with Ben Cray. He's a professional harness racing punter and he's answering your listener questions. So the next question was, I can't bring myself to back more than one horse in a race. If one doesn't stand out for value or its winning hope, I stay away. Is this the correct approach?
I think this is definitely not the correct approach for a few different reasons, Dave. One I like to look at, let's say that there's three horses which we consider value, which one of those are you going to select? I mean, for instance, myself, I don't actually make selections in races. I price every horse. Therefore, I don't have any favour to which one I want to back. I just back ones which are valued. And for mine, you know, if something's value, why does it matter whether there's one, two, or three? Basically, if you take two horses or three horses, you're combining. It's like you're backing those three versus the field. So it's in effect, it's still a two-horse race. You've just got two, three, or four horses that you're backing versus six or seven horses. So in effect, it's a two-horse race still, but you're just coupling a few together. The second way I like to look at it, let's take a soccer match, for instance. You know, how many times do people back the plus a half, I think it is called? You know, let's say Australia playing New Zealand. You've got a draw in there as well, so there's three options. Heaps of times you'll see that people back the plus a half, which actually gives you two options of the three. Or conversely, if you want a layer side, you're backing the other two options. This is the same in horse racing. Let's say you don't like the favourite and you're going to lay it on Betfair. Well, in effect, let's say there's 10 horses in the race. In effect, you're actually backing 9 horses. So there's many different ways to do it. And for mine, you can't just single out one horse, because which one are we actually putting on top? Just the favoured runner or the second one? You know, what happens when one that is 10 to 1 rated wins at 20 to 1 and you've only backed the favourite because, you know, it's the shortest one that we got as value? You're going to really be doing your head in, and that's when your discipline's going to start to struggle. So for mine, I'm happy to back any horse that's value, because if someone says to you, this is value, I want to take it, doesn't matter whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4 horses in the race.
I saw a 60 Minutes interview with Billy Walters, the massive US sports guy, and he said something like, much like what you were saying there, and he's framed his market, but it's basically if he's valued something at $10, he's a buyer at $8 and he's a seller at $12.
I mean, you can even liken this to just general life. You know, if you went into the shop and saw a pair of jeans that are normally, you know, $100 and they're $30, well, you're going to buy them. And if you saw a T-shirt that's the same sort of value, you're going to buy it as well. Why just buy one thing? So this way you're buying two or three things that are value, and in the long run, as long as the ratings are right, you will end up winning. Yes, your margins may be smaller, but what would you rather win? 8 or 9 or 10% consistently, or win 30% one day, lose 30% the next day, win 30% the next day, etc.? You know what I mean?
That the next part of that question is, how do you form an accurate market? And, yeah, tips on how to quickly frame your own market. So I suppose from two aspects. One is, if people want to do it quickly, which isn't easy, how would you frame a market? And then also, how do you go about framing yours?
Yeah, well, obviously, you've got to know about percentages. So that's another podcast, I suppose, how to work out percentages. But it's quite easy to do, and to just whip up a spreadsheet very quickly. And if anyone doesn't have one, please contact you guys and we'll send you through a very basic spreadsheet on how to form a market. It's all about judging. If you're doing a punter's market, it's all about judging how many times you think a horse will win a race, basically. So if you have a look at a race and you think this horse is going to win it 50% of the time, then $2 or even money is the price of that horse. If we're doing a 100% market, if you think it's going to win 10% of the time, then obviously $9 or $10 or whatever it is going to be the price of the horse. So you've got to estimate how many times you think this horse will win that race and then convert that to a price. And this is where we see, again, our favourite topic, Dave, the long shot favourite long shot bias. We'll see horses that are 30 and 40 to 1 at the tab, which in effect mean they think will win, you know, three times in 100, three out of 100 times. Whereas if you actually think about it, these horses might only win 1 out of 500 or 600 times. There's just no hope that these horses are going to win. And if they have 3 or 4 of these at 30 to 1 that should be 100 or 200 to 1, then there's 10 or 12% of the market that they're going to be wrong on, and that's just on the long shots. And this is where, if we rate these long shots and favourites correctly, this is where we'll pick apart the markets. Secondly, how do I frame a market? I usually read all the form, do some, you know, I do the form, I do the videos, all the stuff, the preparation that you need. And then I pick out what I think are the main hopes. Now, a wise man once told me, I used to do the dogs, and that's where I started pricing. And in an 8-dog race, he always said the top four had to be over 100%, and the rest of it is what you should be making. So in a very broad terms, the chances that you think are a winning chance should be over the 100%, and then you make up the rest of your market with what are probably not the winning chances. I like to frame my markets to 130 and then convert them back. So for mine, if there's only 2 chances in the race, you'll find that both those percentages probably add up to the 100% or 105% or whatever it is. If there's 4 chances, then those 4 prices will add up to somewhere over the 100%, and the rest of the field I'll make up 30% with. So I usually like to go through the field and just outline the chances first. I'll probably outline what I think are the winning chances, probably the place chances, and then the ones that are absolutely no hope. And then I judge. I go from, okay, this favourite here, how many times will it win if this race is run 100 times? Will it win 50 times? Yes, it will probably win 50 times, therefore it's an even money chance. So bang, whang, whack down $2 for that horse, and then go from the next one. When you do all that, you should be, hopefully, with good practice, somewhere around whatever you're aiming for. I aim for 130%. You know, if you're 120, then you can do some... you can do some tweaking, whether it's with your long shots if you don't think they're long enough, or if you think the favourite needs to firm a little bit more. But that's the way I sort of approach it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, one of the challenges you face is the shorties at the trot. So, you know, you're trying to work out whether they should be, you know, $1.10, $1.30, $1.60, whatever, which is not the easiest thing to do. A lot of the, you know, the more data-driven guys struggle at that short end of the market to, if they're working off any kind of, you know, algorithm or database, yep. It can be hard to get them short enough. You sometimes, you know, basically divide a fair percentage amongst the, I suppose to say, the no-hopers, and then work out what you're left with for the favourite.
Yeah, 100%. And there are a lot of guys out there that do the data stuff, and I'm not one of them. But a lot of guys, you know, I've got a mate that's a pro punter as well, and I'll have something $1.30 or $1.20. He's like, oh, I can't get it below $1.70. And, you know, I'll say, but it's going to win more than 40% of the races or whatever percent that is. And he'll just say, yeah, but I can't get it that low. You know, but that's, I suppose, the difference between what I do and what data guys do. Now, I had a short discussion with you about this before, and the way I suppose I get to the $1.10, $1.20 or $1.30, because let's face it, there's not much difference between $1.10 and $1.20 and $1.30 shot. They're pretty much expected to win. So the way I sort of get there is, yeah, I work to 130% and I'll do all my figures. And if the favourite has come out at $1.40 and I'm only at 120%, I need to find 10% more for my market. So inevitably, I will probably firm my favourite in a bit more and or drift my long shots a bit more. But yeah, that's the way I'll probably then tweak with the favourite and get to its price. So it may be the $1.40 then becomes $1.30 or $1.25 or something like that.
How can I make money out of exotics? So I know you do some place betting, but what about, you know,
Quinella's? Exotics is something. Look, I know that the greyhound guy that we deal with, Greg, is very good at exotics and he does that type of thing. For me, I can't make money consistently out of it because, for me, my one motto is price is king. So unless you're getting value, I don't bet. And how do you know what's value in a Cronulla or a trifecta when the dividends can vary so much? You might get a trifecta with a 50-to-1 winner and 20-to-1 second and 10-to-1 third and only pays $600, whereas it probably should pay $3,000 or whatever it should pay, who knows? But for mine, you know, I don't back exotics myself because there's no fixed price dividends, so how do you know you're getting value? So I can't really answer the question because I don't back them. So for mine, exotics is hard to be consistently making money at because you don't know whether you're taking value or not.
You've answered this, I think, in the earlier response, but do you have a minimum price, say $1.50, where you won't bet under, or do you just look at value?
I've just changed this actually a little bit, Dave. I went through a stage where I didn't touch odds on for no apparent reason other than I was uncomfortable having to bet more than another race to get my money back, if that makes sense, if it lost. I've lowered it down to $1.80 as now my price. But in saying that, I will actually go shorter, but only if it's real, real value. If I, you know, and we know that the trot site, there's more short stuff than there is in any other code. It's, you know, there was one that went around there today at $1.04 that $1.04 was actually probably overs. Not that I backed at $1.04, but, you know, if that sort of went up at maybe $1.40 or something and it was rated $1.08, you know, that's quite a good over still, and I would probably have a go at it. So the long and fast of it is actually not a minimum price for me, but I try and make $1.80 unless I'm getting exceptional value.
What about getting the best prices? How do you know when to bet early or wait? What's the best time, or how do you decide the right moment to put your bet on?
It's a fantastic question, and this is what I want to do a live podcast with some of our guys on. You know, there's many programs out there these days, and I see that Champion Picks has one now, a price comparison program.
Yep.
Congratulations, it looks good. I currently use one called Dynamic Odds, which I think everyone uses as well. It's cheap to use. I'm not plugging them, but it is a good.
Plug. We've been giving them a plug for years, and you know, it's mate, $30 or whatever. It's
the best spent. $30 you'll ever spend, I'm telling you now. So, unless anyone's not familiar with it, it's like standing in the middle of a bookmaker's ring these days. You can put all the bookmakers' prices up there, and like I said, the next podcast we'll do, I'll give you a show on my screen exactly how I set mine up. But you can look at all the tote prices, Betfair. Champion Picks have got their rated price in there, so it's nice and easy to see. All the fixed prices. The way I've got mine set up is that it flashes red when something is firming. It flashes green when something is drifting. So you get to know those colours. I've got Betfair in two different distinct colours. They get underlined, the back or lay side, when there's a certain amount on those sides. I don't know whether you do all that, but it's something that I've come to sort of... And basically, you just watch all this. And the more you watch and get the feel for a market, the time you'll know to bet. There is no answer to this, Dave. It's practice, mate. You sit there, and how do you know when you're standing in the middle of a ring when to bet? You probably watch Joe Blow go up to Tom Waterhouse in the old days, and he firms one, then the next bookmaker firms one, then the next bookmaker firms one. Well, it's the same here. When they're all firming, you probably know that all of them are going to firm. So if you can still get a good price, it's probably worth taking. So that's obviously that's the obvious way of knowing when something's going to firm. The back and lay side of Betfair is extremely important, probably more so in the races because there's a lot more liquidity there. The trots doesn't seem to get any liquidity till probably 2 minutes to go. But if someone's, you know, on the lay side trying to back something at $3 for a couple of $1,000, and you know the tab or some corp are backing, are offering $2.90 about it, you pretty much know that's going to go because someone's trying to back it at $3. So the $2.90 is probably as good as it's going to go because, in effect, no one's going to offer odds over what the lay price is on Betfair. So the amount of money stacked up on Betfair on the lay side is a good indication it's going to firm. And conversely, if there's someone happy to lay it, so in other words, on the back side of Betfair, for a couple of $1,000 at $3, you know it's probably going to drift out to $3.50 or even more because people are happy to let you on Betfair. Therefore, I can't see people running in to back it at the corporates. So Betfair is a huge guide. And the other guide, you know, it's not as much a guide, but it is one, is the actual tote price. You know, if something opens up $1.80 on the tote and there's a couple of thousand in the pool, yes, it could be a result of a big all-up, but, you know, it's still an indication that there's money for this horse. And if they want to go and put up $5 or $6 about it, it would be an odd occasion that it wouldn't firm. So there's sort of certain things that you can watch. But, you know, it's just like standing in the middle of an old-school bookmaker's ring where there actually were bookmakers, and how did you ever judge it then? You know, it's the same thing, and it just takes feel, and it's something that there's no right or wrong answer for, and I get it wrong a lot of times too, but if you feel you're getting value, take it and get it. And there's only one way to learn, Dave, and that's to practice, mate.
One of the biggest problems in harness is there's so few price assessors, though. There's so many, you know, copycat bookies. So who would you suggest, like, I suppose if one corporate? Is it, you know, the tabs fixed odds? If they're turning one in, that's a pretty good lead that all the rest are going to follow?
So at the moment, Bet365 go up early. They're the only ones. And I'm not giving them any credit for being price assessors, but they probably take 5 minutes to put a price up, to do some form of put a price up. They'll just whack a price up and let the so-called smarties decide which one to firm. You know, they'll let them on for a couple of $100 or whatever they let them on for, and then they'll firm it. So for mine, have a look at what has firmed in the day. At if there's any early bookmakers gone up, in the Gallups there's probably more. But for trots, just go and have a look at Bet365 and have a look at which one's firmed. It's a surefire sign that someone smart's already backed it. I hope no one is listening from the tab here, because they don't do it. It's amazing how many times you'll see something has firmed from 350 to 250 at Bet365 and the tab go and whack up 350. Well, for mine, they know it's going to firm. I'm not giving away any world secrets here, but they just don't seem to sort of work this out. So I think early movements are most important at whoever puts up an early price. Obviously, if the tab, you know, goes straight off on something, they're more than likely later, but we all know that they can play games and they can keep firming something, you know, extremely, extremely short in the hope that people then go, oh, this thing's firmed 10 points, let's jump on and sell it at the rock bottom price. So sometimes don't fall for the tab's tricks. And don't jump in if it's firmed six times, because they may not have actually laid it six times. I know that sounds stupid because old school bookmakers would be shaking their head in shame, but that's just the way it is these days. People are traders, they're not bookmakers. They're trying to sell you things at the lowest possible price. So there's all sorts of tricks they can do. I don't know if I'm off track now, Dave, but that's...
No, that's good. I'm sure that's relevant for what people wanted to hear. The next question was, do you ever stop because you've won enough for the day?
It's the same answer, do you stop because you've lost for the day? It's the same answer as don't bet double on the last race. It's the same answer as so many things. No, you don't stop, because what if you stop after race six? You know, what if you get race seven and eight and they're part of your 8% that you win, because you're going to lose for eight races in a row tomorrow? So for mine, again, there's no last race unless you think there's a last race in your punting career. But... you know, why are you, if you've price raced 7 and 8, why are you not backing them just because you're winning? You might win those two, and those, you know, you might win a few hundred dollars on those two, and that's the few hundred dollars that you'll lose tomorrow that would have made up a small profit for the 2 days.
How do you access your winnings to use as a steady income? Is it withdrawal from accounts or laying through exchanges and copping a commission?
No, I don't do that at all, mate. I like to keep a sort of a balance in all the bookmakers' accounts. I don't want to give them too much money, obviously, but just enough to cover a couple of bets. Because there's nothing worse than seeing $4 flash up at Tats Bet and, oh, I've got a deposit and hang on, my credit card's not working, so I've got to do it by poly, which takes another 2 minutes, this, that, and the other. Next thing you know, it's $3 and you've missed your price. So I like to keep a little bit amount of the money in the bookmakers that I can have a bet with. And other than that, I'll just empty it out once a week, pretty much as old school. On a Monday morning, I'll take it out and I'll pay myself my money for the week that I need to live on and pay my wages and whatever else. The one thing I do, and I mean, this is a bit, I don't want to go financial too much, but, you know, I make sure I pay all my bills before I consider doing any sort of punting, because you don't want to be doing that.
Well, as a follow-up to that, this is another question. After a successful run of winners, how do you keep the money and then continue with the gradual build-up of winnings? My bank has grown more than four times over the last 6 months. I'm still betting at the same level per unit as I did at the start. At what point should you look to up your betting stakes?
It's all about where you're comfortable. You know, if this four times, you know, if this person started with $5,000 in the bank and they got 20, you know, are they happy with that? You know, like, how much money do you want to make out of this? And this is why I've never been a large punter, because I'm not trying to make $1 million out of it. I just want to make enough to live. And if I can, you know, somehow make six figures or near to that or either side of that, then I'm happy. And I've had runs where I've had a very good bank and decided, you know, let's up it. But, you know, you shouldn't do it. There's a reason you got to this person in particular, and I hope they were one of my members. There's a reason they got to four times their amount of money, is because they were disciplined. And when you win, you should actually reward yourself. Sorry, I'm probably getting off track here, but go and go and spend the money on something. Go and buy yourself a new pair of jeans or go out for dinner or whatever, because you want to be able to enjoy what you're winning and the reason you're doing it. There's got to be a reason you're doing it. You know, don't just, you know, it's well and good to keep the money in the bank and to have a bank for the bad times, but at some stage, go and spend some of your money, and when you do it, you know, think back and think how happy you are that you were disciplined and the way you got there, as opposed to fluking a couple of winners on a Saturday afternoon in the old times. You know, you might have done it, but this way you've really grounded out and you've done it the right way. So that's the way I like to sort of think of it as well. You know, I've just been on a holiday to Europe for 2 weeks over Christmas, and, you know, while I was there, I'm, like, thankful for the reason I was able to do it.
Well, that's the end of the listener question. So we've covered getting started, the workload and lifestyle, form analysis and bet placement. Was there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we wrap it up?
No, I think we're cool, but yeah, all good.
Excellent. All right, appreciate your time, Ben. All the best for you.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.